south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, meet Johnny here. This will be the last live show, well, kind of live show, because as of today, when the show goes out, July 5th, I'll be out on the road with my Expat Insider Seminar group. That means for the next week or so, if you tune in, you'll be getting the best of the Expat Files, or maybe the worst, who knows. Hey, how about that for a killer PR stunt? A commemorative gift box set of shows called The Worst of the Expat Files. A splendid gift for children of all ages. Don't worry, that's not going to happen. Especially since all the shows, the good, the bad, and the ugly ones, are free. All right, here's an email I got last week from someone who's coming to the seminar. He says, "Dear Johnny, I'd like to bring my drone down on the trip. It's the kind that's got its own little backpack. Do I need any permits, and what are the drone flying restrictions in Central America and Latin America in general? Signed, you know who I am, Johnny." All right, well, I'm glad you asked that question. You know why? A couple of seminars ago, that's exactly what one of our attendees did. He brought down his drone, a very popular model called the DJI Phantom 3 Professional. He flew that thing everywhere, over Mayan pyramids, around Lake Atitlan, the most beautiful lake in the world, and other places known and unknown. He got some tremendous footage. And you know what? Coming down from the U.S. with that thing strapped to his back, not a single person bothered him. If you think he'd been lucky or it was just a fluke, he came back as a repeat offender, and he brought the drone down again. Same thing. No muss, no fuss. However, things are changing, and though Latin America has a lot of built-in lag time in every department, countries are starting to pass drone use and restriction laws. Then again, whether they're ever going to enforce those laws is another thing. This is Latin America, you know. Yes, Latin countries have passed all the legislation and laws known to first world man. They copy everything the U.S. does, but they never seem to allocate enough funds or personnel to actually carry out the enforcement, which, in my mind, is a good thing. In fact, that's one of the reasons I like it so well down here. The thing is, what I see all the time when green gringos and expats first get down here to Latin America, they're absolutely terrified of doing something illegal, thinking the cops are going to come down on them. There'll be no due process. They'll go in front of a judge who doesn't speak English, and they'll get tossed in the slammer, and they'll throw away the key. You know, like that movie Midnight Express. Of course, that didn't take place in Latin America, but nevertheless, that's every first world person's idea of the third world legal system. Well, you know, once you're down here a while, you'll realize that just isn't so. Unless, of course, you get caught smuggling drugs. The operative word there, smuggling, not just casually using. Then again, if you get caught smuggling a huge amount of drugs, you almost always get off. It's the small-time dealers and idiots that get caught and go to jail. It's a lot like big banking, pharma, and political crimes up in the States. The small-timers go to jail, the big fish get a fine, a slap on the hand, and another round of government contracts. But I digress. Anyway, regarding fresh green gringos and expats coming down and thinking, man, they better not break a single law. The fact is, U.S. citizens are scared to death of the U.S. legal system, and they carry that with them down here. Yep, we've been whipped into shape all right, which is why nearly 100% of us obey traffic signals. Not to mention, even 90-year-old ladies are scared to death of being just a smidgen off on their tax forms. Well, the fact is, you could say the U.S. government, Big Brother, law enforcement system has us well-trained and scared f***less. You can tell that right away when new fresh green gringos come down and they're in a car, taxi, Uber, or they're driving a rental themselves. When they're on the road and they see with their own eyes the countless traffic laws that are violated with impunity, often right in front of traffic cops who do nothing about it, that's when it finally sinks in that a law is not necessarily a law. Come on, how many times have you been stuck in a big, crowded intersection in Milwaukee or Cleveland and the light remains red for it seems like a lifetime? Then suddenly, one guy here or one guy there, and then many people start running that red light. Nope, you'll never see that happen up in the States, because you'll get slammed with a huge fine, and maybe they'll take your license away. But here in Latin America, running red lights is absolutely a way of life, even when a transit cop is standing right there. So what's he do then? Well, nothing. He'll either ignore it or shrug his shoulders and shake his head. Though sometimes, if he's really bothered, he'll point at the driver, motion with his hand to pull over. But most men just won't. Women, however, usually will, but they're usually not the ones running red lights either. I've observed this situation a lot, and it seems like it's almost always macho guys who are jumping the gun. I think it's definitely true that women drivers get a bad rap, mostly because some guy behind her is in a hurry and she's obeying all the rules. Though, ironically, I'm all in favor of women, even men, running red lights if you're stuck in a crap neighborhood at night. Doesn't matter which country you're in, including the U.S. and Canada. But back to drones. Speaking of brand new drone legislation that won't get enforced, that is, unless you're very unlucky, stupid, plain reckless, or someone's got it out for you, I'd like to read for you now some of the general drone legislation that's been drawn up in various Latin American countries, including Mexico, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, Chile, Guatemala, Colombia, and on and on. I have here a copy of the legislation as of April 2018. It's in Spanish, and I'll try to translate. It says, as of this date, drone flying will be regulated by the country's Civil Aviation Institute. If you possess a drone and it weighs less than 4.4 pounds, that would be 2 kilograms, you are not required to have a permit. However, we strongly suggest you still request permission by going to that particular Latin American country website, because the Customs Department at the airport tends to hold these kind of items in order to assess duties and taxes. So in other words, they're not trying to restrict you or hold you to any kind of regulations in flying the thing. They just want to hit you with some taxes. Sounds easy enough, but the problem is, of course, when you go to a Latin American government website, it's going to be in Spanish. All right, let's go on with the rest of this ruling. It says, drones imported or carried into the country must be made of flexible materials in case of possible impact towards objects or persons. In other words, the propellers have to be made out of plastic or graphite, like they all are, and not out of the same stuff they make machetes out of. Yeah, right, like they have to incorporate something that obvious into a law. What a bunch of doofuses, huh? All right, then it says, number 2, the drone must be manually operated, allowing you or the operator to maintain direct visual contact at all times, not exceeding 122 meters of distance from you or the operator. That'd be 400 feet. By the way, I have a drone, and I know some people who do, and all of us send our drones out into the stratosphere, miles away. 400 feet, that's a laugh. Now, I'm telling you this just to put you in touch with a little drone operator reality here. All right. Number 3, you must not fly the drone inside a 5-mile radius, that's 8 kilometers, of any airport. Number 4, you must not operate the drone at night. Oh, really? And they've got all those nice blinking and flashing lights on them. Well, there's a rule that's begging to be broken. All right, number 5, the drone must be in good working order and fly with permissible weather conditions. Duh. Could anything be more obvious? Then again, all the drone operators I know prefer to fly their drones when damaged in rain, hail, and sleet. All right, that calls for another duh. Number 6, must be permanently in your sight and in control of the operator at all times. Number 7, you must obtain permission, preferably written, but it can be verbal, from the resort or any private property over which you intend to fly your drone and to operate when the area is not crowded so as to not invade anyone's privacy, particularly on busy beaches or tourist sites. Number 8, if your drone is above the 2-kilogram, 4.4-pound limit, you will need permission from the country's Civil Aviation Institute. You can contact them directly at the government website, and then they show a government website, to receive your application and start the process at least a month before your trip. Yeah, right, as if that's going to happen. Finally, it says, if your drone weighs more than 2 kilograms, 4.4 pounds, you are required by law to submit a permission request to the Civil Aviation Institute. In this request, you must specify the date, time, and place of use, and the nature of usage, whether it's commercial or personal. All right, just a little observation here. Even a big professional DJI drone like the Phantom 3 or 4 only weigh about 3 pounds complete with camera, battery, and all. So even though the rules sound quite restrictive, the framers of this law must have written the legislation long time ago when drones were very heavy, 5 pounds and over. But these days, they really don't apply to probably 95% of all the drones sold for private, even commercial use. In fact, drones are getting smaller, not bigger. And some of the latest, greatest drones, the industry standards like the Mavic Pro, also a DJI drone and cost around $1,200 to $1,500. Those things with batteries and camera only weigh around 2 pounds. That's good news, even for nervous Nelly gringos who might be worried about bringing a drone in. So then, what about being taxed on the way in? Not to worry, as long as it looks slightly used and is not in the fresh, shrink-wrapped box, or they just might try to nail you. Oh, and expat Eddie has a fail-safe answer when he's hauling his drone around. He's been asked by customs when going through borders if he's filming for a commercial enterprise. Say no to that unless you're a resident, because if you're not a resident, technically you don't have permission to work and make money. He just tells them he's filming his sister's wedding. Turns out everyone likes that answer, even the brain-dead slugs in customs. Oh, and don't forget, drones have lithium batteries, pretty big ones. Airlines are touchy about those things, you know. You want to pack them right so they don't get confiscated. Just check your airline's website. They've got a section on lithium batteries. They all do. And on the subject of drones here in Latin America, yep, all the hobby shops sell them, even the latest, greatest models, but you're going to pay at least a third to a half more than you would if you ordered them on Amazon or brought one down yourself. In fact, one of our famous past expat insider seminar attendees, Oscar Miner, who also gives us a cryptocurrency mining presentation at the seminar, he is, you know, an undisputed expert in that field. So everyone coming to the seminar will absorb some of that wisdom. And even better, hang with him for a couple of hours. Now, what most people don't know is that Oscar has drones. Man, does he have drones. You might not believe this, but if you were to visit Oscar's condo, it's a very nice condo. As you walk through the place, he's got a couple of special rooms that are all teched out, where you'll see various pieces of crypto mining equipment and about between 10 and 20 drones. Most all of them in various stages of modification and, well, you could say reconditioning, because he likes to take stock products and make them faster and stealthier, which is why most of his drones are in various stages of, well, let's just say disassembly. Now, Oscar lives only about 10 minutes from me, right around all those coffee fields, so there's plenty of places to fly these things. I mean, plenty. Now, you might ask, why so many drones? Well, you know, people who are heavily involved in electronics, software, crypto, engineering, and tech, well, they all, me included, have their strange obsessions. Just like some people have Harley, muscle car, Barbie, or dollhouse, or baseball card obsessions, well, Oscar has drones. So then you might be wondering, what's my obsession or obsession? Well, I'll tell you one of them. Since I grew up in a household where my father had a tool drawer with just a Phillips, a flathead, and a hammer in it, oh, and one slightly bent adjustable pliers. Why? Because when something broke, he always called somebody to fix it. And I, even as a kid, was an inveterate tinkerer. I'd take everything apart and try to get it back together, mostly to the regret of my parents, especially in the early years. Well, early on, because there were no tools in the house. I think when I was probably 12 years old, I promised myself, when I had my first job, a paper route, I decided whatever tool I needed, I would buy it. It would be mine. Even if I only used it once in my life, I would have it. And I wouldn't use the wrong tool on the right job. I'd get the right tool. I'd own that too. So even at 17, 18, and 19 years old, I'd go to rummage sales around Chicago and buy up tools. They didn't necessarily have to be new. In fact, I preferred it that way because they were much cheaper at rummage sales, but they had to be good, high-quality stuff. So I ended up with a massive basement and garage full of tools, everything and anything. So I guess by the time I was around 22 years old, I'd amassed enough tools so I could completely overhaul or rebuild a car, build kitchen cabinets, even a whole house. In fact, the basement and garage looked like a hardware store. You know, when I first moved to Latin America, about 30 years ago now, I shipped a container down that was completely filled with my tools and some household items and stuff. And where did it land? Well, quite naturally, in Costa Rica. You know, 30 years ago, if you had your sights set on Latin America, Mexico and Costa Rica were probably the only two places that clueless gringos knew about. But even 30 years ago, it was overrun with gringos, so I only lasted there about two and a half years. And my tools, well, most of them, the good ones, traveled around with me too. And they are right now somewhere in Guatemala. Actually, I have a pretty good collection in another unnamed Latin country too. So tools, people might say, are one of my crazy obsessions. Why? Because I just hate borrowing things from people. Remember what old Ben Franklin said? He wrote in Poor Richard's Almanac, "Neither a lender nor a borrower be." I always wondered why he named his monthly pamphlet Poor Richard's Almanac. Because, you know, if you followed even some of Ben Franklin's advice, you'd certainly never be poor. Oh, and by the way, about Oscar Miner's drone collection. Well, a lot of them are just tiny racing drones that go over 100 miles an hour. Talk about lethal weapons, huh? Full disclosure here, he didn't bring any of them down personally. He ordered them all through Amazon. Then, as you longtime listeners know, you have them ship it to your Miami mail drop, and they forward it to your country in Latin America in a week or so. Next step, Oscar gets notified by email, and he goes down and picks it up or has it delivered to his house. and it costs him around $6 to $8 a pound. Oh, and here's a little trick when ordering from Amazon, eBay, whatever, and having it shipped to your Miami box and then it finally makes it to your Latin destination. You know, those services are readily available in practically every Latin country except Cuba. Even Venezuelans have mail forwarding services out of Miami. And they charge anywhere from around $3 to $8 a pound. And most of them state right on their webpage that you don't have to pay a aduana or taxes if it's under a certain amount. Usually $200 or $300. That seems to be the range. Then the package slips right through custom without even being opened and comes right to you. So then what if it is over the $200 or $300 limit? How are the customs and aduana people going to know that? I mean, when you get a box from Amazon, it doesn't have a price on it. Sometimes there's not even a price inside the box. Not to mention, with Amazon, they combine a lot of things in a box, too. You might get 6 or 7 different items from different companies. Each one of them you order separately, and they combine them because then they can minimize their shipping costs. You know what I mean? When you order from Amazon, you can check a box that says combine items. That's always the best thing to do if you're having them shipped to Latin America. You're paying by weight, remember. Because if you have various items that are under 1 pound, they'll round it up and you'll pay for each pound. Combining them is much more efficient and cheaper. Now, sometimes when you order something with a very big box, seems to be heavy or has an odd-shaped box, or appears to be a very well-made and expensive box, you'll get flagged by the aduana, and your mail forwarding service will send you an email saying, please send us a scan or photo of the receipt to see what you paid for it. You have to do that before customs will release the package. Well, let me tell you a little story that happened to me recently. I just bought a 42-inch TV from Amazon. I could have bought it here in Latin America, but there was a super-duper one of those prime sales where it was only like $143, and certainly it would have been around $350 to $400 here in Latin America for an equivalent model. So I thought, hey, what the hell? The sale's on for just one day. I'll get it. It weighs 14 pounds, and it's going to be $3 or $4 a pound, so still, I'd be paying under $200 for a TV that would be almost twice as much here. So anyway, I got the email from my mail forwarder, and it says, please send us the scan of your receipt. And I did, and I know since it was only $143, being under the $300 limit in this country, I pay zero import taxes and aduana fees. So far, so good. Well, about a half a year ago, I bought a real nice computer from Amazon. Must have been around $1,200, way over the aduana and customs limit of $300. So I downloaded the Amazon receipt for myself, moved it over to my Photoshop program. Took me about a minute and a half to change a few digits, and now it looked like I paid around $285 for this computer. Of course, I did that strictly in the interest of seeing what customs would do, a fact-finding mission on my part, you could say. And guess what? It went through just fine. Now, of course, you do-gooders out there are thinking the honorable thing to do would be to now pony up and pay those taxes. Experiment worked, you saw it could be done, but honesty should prevail, right? Well, you know how I feel about those pustulant, lard-ass bastards in government, don't you? And I mean that in the kindest, most Christian way, of course. So am I advocating that you should do the same? No, not at all. You have to decide for yourself. Some people like to push boundaries, some don't. As for me, in the case of the computer, if I hadn't done a little photoshopping, I certainly would have had to pony up at least $200 to $250 in taxes to a bunch of known thieves. So was my little photoshopping incident a fluke? Nope, I've done it 3 or 4 times since then. Oh, and here is another very cool loophole. If you're bringing expensive stuff down, or you're thinking of shipping any expensive stuff down, if you don't have receipts or copies of receipts attached, the aduana or customs people will assign a value and it's always higher than what it should be. So how do you avoid that? Well, you could do what a lot of astute gringos and expats do. They take the original receipt, Photoshop the number down, then in the description put down used or refurbished. Because, you know, these days, Amazon, eBay, all of them sell used and refurbished items for a lot less than the original brand new in the box. So let's say, for example, you had a mountain bike you were shipping. It's worth $5,000. Some of those things are really expensive. First thing you do is you mung it up a little bit at least so it's not looking brand new. You take the original receipt, you mark it down to, let's say, $1,500, put down in the description in big letters, used or refurbished, and you'll save a ton of dough going through customs. Of course, I'm not advising you to do this. I'm just telling you what a lot of astute gringos and expats do. Usually after they've been burned a few times, bringing things through customs the so-called right way. The thing is, if you don't have a receipt, the customs and aduana people will look that stuff up on the internet and charge you fees and taxes based on the new retail price. That's why there's a whole lot of receipt doctoring going on. they've got nothing to lose. The worst that can happen is they'll just say, no way, and charge taxes and aduana fees based on the full amount. By the way, it's amazing how non-standardized the aduana tax system seems to be. For example, you could bring a brand new $5,000 mountain bike through customs and pay, let's say, $600 in taxes this week, and in a month, do the same thing and get charged $400 or $800. Which is why I always say, since they play those kind of games with you, you've got the right to bend things a bit yourself. Because again, all that can happen is they could say, no, we're going with the price basis that we've come up with. But still, as much as you might like or dislike Amazon, it's done a great thing for receiving things here in Latin America that just can't be obtained otherwise at local stores, especially oddball custom and one-off stuff. And you'll find if you order right and the items are of small weight, even if you can find the very same product here in Latin America, you could generally pick them up online from Amazon, Alibaba, or eBay, much cheaper, even after factoring in the shipping. Those are games you'll learn to play once you're down here long enough. And you know, that's why I also think it would be a great gringo business opportunity to teach Latinos how to use Amazon and eBay. Because I'll tell you, 100% of them would just love to use those sites, but they don't speak English. They have no idea how to maneuver their way through those sites, nor do they know how to take advantage of the way you can combine shipping, get free shipping, use coupons, combine orders, take advantage of special days and deals, buy from different suppliers, evaluate the comments and reviews to see if they're BS or not. The basic stuff most of us know already, but Latinos are clueless about. I can envision a seminar at a hotel salon entitled Amazon, Alibaba y eBay para Tontos. Amazon, Alibaba, and eBay for dummies, or tontos. Like Tonto, the Lone Ranger's sidekick, which means stupid, idiot, or dummy. Moving on, got another email. This one's from Kiki. She says, and this lady, Johnny, are there closed fishing seasons in Latin America? I'm a girl who likes to catch my own, and I'm not talking about going out on one of those expensive day-long marlin/bill fishing rigs. Even then, you're often crowded in a boat with a bunch of people you don't like or wouldn't want to hang with anyway. As for me, I'm into lake, river, and estuary fishing. My plan is to bring down my portable gear and fish in a few different countries, starting on the Caribbean side, around Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Roatan, etc., and working my way through Costa Rica by land to the Pacific side, where I hear there is great fishing. Signed, an avid listener for 3+ years now, Kiki from Boulder. All right, Kiki, thanks for that. You know, I've been on a couple of those fishing expeditions myself. You're right, it costs a few $100 and you're stuck on a boat with people you wouldn't want to hang with under any other circumstances. Yep, I've been there. Because to me, you know, deep sea and bill fishing is kind of boring. But talk about bringing home the spoils, fresh fish. Wow, that's the only way to go. Wait a minute, spoils and fresh fish? There's something incongruent about that, isn't there? All right, here's a few tips. If you're starting out near Puerto Rico, the DR, and Roatan, if you hook up with a fishing charter or billfish charter, they'll tell you we're going for 3 or 4 different kinds of fish. They'll narrow it down and you'll get them too. Though all countries have their rules. For example, in the Dominican Republic, they have several closed fishing seasons by law. So it's prohibited, for example, for anyone to fish, consume, or possess the following marine species during these designated time periods. I am reading from their website. It says, you can't eat lobster between March 1st and June 30th. You can't eat crab between March 1st and June 30th. And you can't eat conch between July 1st and August 31st. That's okay. I never liked conch anyway. It's all about the breeding season, you know. But the odd thing is, at least in these Caribbean countries, it says these species cannot be available for sale or served at food establishments, markets, or other commercial locations during these closed fishing months. Fishing for parrotfish, too, and sharks is strictly prohibited at all times, year-round, it says. Violating the laws will result in heavy fines and imprisonment. So tourists, beware. So then you might ask, are these laws followed rigidly by the locals? In a word, hell no. Are you kidding? All right, I know, that was 5 words. Bottom line, the locals are breaking those rules all the time. So then how many are actually fined or put in prison? How about 0? Can't say I've ever heard of or seen or read in the papers or on the internet of anyone who's ever been fined or put in jail. So they've got the laws, all right, but they've got no lobster, crab, conch, or restaurant police. And though the locals may be poor and they look it, they're smart enough to realize they don't want to overfish. So a balance, sometimes a delicate balance, does exist. I mean, look, you longtime listeners have heard me mention on a past show, You could be walking down the street in a beachside area in Costa Rica or Guatemala, Mexico, Nicaragua, etc. Never fails, during certain times of the year, little kids will run up to you with baskets selling turtle eggs. Even though the laws say it's definitely prohibited to dig up turtle eggs. Well, where do you think they get them? At Walmart? You know, there are no turtle police. Though there are semi-organized groups of gringo do-gooders that come in now and again. Isn't that funny? It's always the gringo do-gooders, never the locals, that try to fix things. Even so, the local kids dig them up and sell them, as they have done, generation after generation. Turtle eggs. Yuck. Personally, I think they're gross, but I see them in the markets all the time. So how do you solve a problem like that? Well, education won't. Those guys are in subsistence mode. They need the calories and the protein, and they don't care what the do-gooders or the government say. Why? Because the stomach speaks louder than words. Though, in the end, you could say it's about the money, because my friend who happens to have a beach house in Guatemala, and those kids pass by all the time. You longtime listeners may have heard me mention this before, too. The fact that he buys quantities of those eggs from those kids, and he brings them down to the turtle sanctuary a couple of miles down the road. Run by who else? Do-gooder gringos. So it's a win-win. In the end, the kids get their dough, and the turtles get to live. Well, I take that back. It's not exactly a win-win, because after the kids sell off those eggs, they're off to the store to buy junk food and Coca-Cola. So when you think about it, nutrition-wise anyway, in the end, they'd have been much better off just eating those eggs themselves. Yuck. But back to our fisherwoman, Kiki. Kiki, my advice, by all means, go fishing. But do ocean fishing and estuary fishing only. Don't fish rivers, streams, or lakes. Unless you're just doing it for sport and you're going to toss them back. But to me, that's no fun either. As you've heard me mention before, practically all inland water supplies are contaminated in Latin America. And I wouldn't trust most first world streams and lakes either. That doesn't mean you can't fish there. Just don't eat this stuff, please. Though the thing that really bugs me is that there'll be little tourist destinations around lakes and rivers inland, and practically all the little restaurants, especially the mom-and-pop restaurants, will have the local fish catch of the day. Yep, people eat that stuff all the time. I wouldn't, and you shouldn't either. In fact, if you're at a restaurant in Latin America, or anywhere for that matter, you should always ask for the origin of the fish. If it's been imported, don't eat it. When the waiter says importado, he thinks it's higher quality, but in reality, it's coming from China, Chile, Malaysia, Vietnam, one of those factory fish farms, where fish are swimming in antibiotics and eating their own poop. However, if it's local fish from that particular country, that'd be fine, as long as it's a small in size that is low on the food chain, ocean-going fish. You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!